From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in March of 2020 when literally hundreds of thousands of American workers had to go remote. For some, it was a nightmare, a disjointed mess, a struggle to balance the potential distractions of home life with their work needs. But for many others, it was a revelation, a chance to see what a remote schedule could offer in terms of flexibility and improved mental health. Some workers have said they will not go back, which brings us to the curious story of Governor Andrew Cuomo. This week, Governor Cuomo said that employers need to bring workers back to the office by Labor Day. He made the comments during an address before members of the Association for a Better New York. There were a number of reasons, Cuomo said. The governor said, quote, "Everybody has to be back in the office. I understand remote working. I understand trepidation. But the COVID numbers are down, and we know how to do this safely. We need private sector companies to say to their employees, I need you back in the office," end quote. And then he cited economic concerns. Cuomo said bringing workers back will help boost neighboring businesses to those workers. The governor said, quote, "We need that volume to support the restaurants, the shops, and services. It's not just about the businesses. It's all about the spin-off economy that your workers bring to the surrounding communities," end quote. Now, finally, the governor said that remote work is just not very productive. He said that the loss of working one-on-one was rough on companies, and remote working fails to generate creativity and the sharing of new ideas. Is he right? Well, months ago, we talked to workers who reported thriving with a new remote schedule. How do they view the governor's comments that they can't be as creative or productive? We're going to talk to a number of people this hour, starting with our guests who are in studio now. Kristen Seversky is a product manager who works remotely, and I think happily so. Welcome back to the program.
Yes, thank you. It's awesome to be here.
And Andrew Brady is co-founder of the Rochester Chapter for Conscious Capitalism and CEO of the Accelerate team. Andrew, welcome back to you.
Always a pleasure.
Let me just start with this. The governor is saying that you, Kristen Seversky, well, I don't know if he mentioned you by name, but
I'll wait for it.
he's implying that people just can't be as creative, can't be as productive, and that remote work doesn't really work. What do you make of that?
What's beautiful about this segment is that we don't really need to have opinions. We have a year of data to look back on and say, you tell me, because I can't agree with these flat statements that we're not creative, we're not thinking of solutions, that we're not dreaming up new ideas, because I watched it happen. I was part of it. A lot of us were part of it. We all did it. And so as much as we've watched companies try to navigate the remote discussion prior to the pandemic, I think that this past year just proved it. So, you know, I get it's a nice statement. It's a flat statement that makes us feel like we can go back to normal with air quotes, but it's just not reflecting the reality that we just lived in.
Does it feel a little to you like the guy standing in the one-hour photo store saying, put those digital cameras down. We are all going back to film. Does it feel a little like that to you?
It, you know, there's the clinging to the status quo that I think we're watching in a lot of different ways right now. And a little bit of me is fascinated by it because it's like, okay, let's see which things are going to stick, which things are going to break, and what things are we going to cling to that we don't need anymore. So, yeah, I do feel like it's a bit of the angry, I don't like this new reality. Let's go back to the way it was where I was comfortable. But the numbers aren't there in favor of that, in my opinion.
Yeah. And so, Andrew Brady, I think there's a few maybe factors in play here. First of all, a lot of people jumped right on these comments to say that he's just worried about the rents of, you know, real estate holders who are probably donors to his campaign, which, by the way, I mean, we're all concerned about downtown office space. Annalise has been on this program talking about the reality of when you're helping run government policy of understanding we're going to have a lot of empty offices. What are we going to do? Or half empty offices. What do we do with that space? But those are problems to solve, not necessarily force people back into an old way of doing things, unless the governor's right, unless he's saying we just can't be as productive. This doesn't work. But I don't know what he's basing that on. And I frankly trust the accounts of people like Kristen who are living that. What do you think he's basing that on?
You know, I was trying to figure out what the rationale was, you know, in a little cynically thinking, you know, maybe he just had a meeting with the commercial real estate folks or whatever. But, you know, it's really interesting because companies, they're always innovating on their products and services, right? But they also compete in a labor market where they have to innovate in that labor market too. And so if they're trying to attract, engage and retain people, there are going to be certain people maybe based on, you know, their preferences, their personality types, maybe based on accessibility concerns, any number of things that some might gravitate towards that. And other companies may decide, hey, we're going to stick with the more traditional model. And maybe there'll be some people that leave because they can find things elsewhere. You know, I was actually at a wedding with some college friends last weekend, and three of the eight of us had shifted, taken a new job that was going to be all remote because they were finding that they really liked it and their companies were trying to pull them back. And so one of my buddies said the other companies would have had to pay me 25% more to be in person. I had others that just said, no, I'm never going to take a fully in-person position again. And so if you can figure out, I mean, it's certainly going to take, like I was saying earlier, it's going to take innovation. Companies are going to have to figure out how to make productivity work. And maybe some companies may decide that based on what they sell, based on, you know, their industry, maybe that they can't figure it out. And you know, I think that the market will sort of decide.
Yeah, I mean, I understand not every job is exactly the same. Not every situation lends itself well to remote work, but certainly, obviously, a lot does. That's why I couldn't really understand the governor's blanket statement, hey, private sector, get everybody back by Labor Day. By the way, case numbers are going up, and just do it. I mean, it was a very strange thing that, at the very least, it looked sort of ham-fisted. You would think that he's going to roll out a rationale as opposed to just maybe appeasing. You're right, a real estate base that's worried. And we should be worried for them, but we should also be wanting to innovate, not force backwards. So if we could, before we get later this hour to one of the guys you're talking about, Andrew Amato is going to join us. He is a product manager who works remotely. So is Kristen. And I know I've asked you to do this, but let's go over your story again because I want an update if we could.
Oh, yeah.
Your story, take us back to March 2020 and everything changes. And then take us through your decision-making on evaluating, does this work for me? And do I want to go somewhere else? Is there a better fit somewhere else?
1,000%.
Take us through that.
Yeah, I remember, so prior to the pandemic hitting, I was someone who would bang the drum of, hey, we're in the tech sphere. We need to be working remotely or opening up the gates, really at least talking about how do we have a remote culture.
Because you were in the office?
I was in the office mm-hmm. full-time. And as a deeply extroverted person, I told myself and convinced myself I could never work remotely. I never thought that that would be possible for someone like me, that I need to be in person, I need to be around people. But then the pandemic happened, and I remember the first week when they're like, we might have to, you know, work from home for a little while. And I remember it was like 2 weeks when we were first, and I was like, okay, you know, stay home for a bit. Oh, okay. So yeah, you know, a year plus later, here I am doing a job search for remote first companies. Because to me, there was the element of we are learning to survive from home, which I do not want to conflate with working from home. And how do we have companies that figure that out and innovate on that front first and foremost? And frankly, what I saw, and I will say just with my local anecdotal evidence, is I saw a lot of companies looking at the closed door and figuring out how to reopen it. And instead of figuring out, okay, we are going to be in this new normal, which I hate saying, but I said it anyway. And how do we adjust to that and figure out how do we innovate in terms of remote life going forward? Because frankly, with the numbers and the Delta variant and the pandemic is not over. So how do we continue what we're doing, stay safe, and adjust? And it's been over a year. These excuses are pretty weak, and we're putting people into bad situations of asking them to come back, even though, you know, I get we're all fatigued and there's a lot of pain and sorrow and harm that went into this, but we have to still adjust. And so I personally started to look for remote first companies and made that shift. And
you found one.
I found one. And I think the important call out here is they are intentional and strategic about their remote policies, about how they conduct themselves remotely, because it's not something you just do because you're working from home. It takes a lot of strategy and intention. And some people just don't want to put that work in, and they're going to suffer with people are going to just end up leaving is frankly what I'm trying to drive to, is other companies are going to figure it out. They're going to open up their doors, and that's it.
And so for you, when you find a company that you said is intentional about remote work,
yep.
It does seem to me that there may be kind of a dividing line. As people took on remote work and perhaps liked it or liked the opportunity to do that and to do it in a different way, mm-hmm. their employers might say, okay, we'll bring you back, but we'll do a little hybrid and we'll try to meet you where you are, versus the company that you now work for that says, we are doing this intentionally. There's no mat that's going to be pulled out from under your feet. And I'm not saying companies are trying to pull the mat out from under workers' feet, but it seems to me very different to say, we're going to do this intentionally and we are committed to it, versus maybe we'll let you do a little bit more of this as we transition back. What do you think?
Oh, totally. That was one of my rants earlier this year of the hybrid model. And I get it. Some companies need to have a bit of both and some employees want a bit of both. And I think that's kind of what, when we last talked together, it was on that front of, I just want companies to talk to their own people and sort out what is best for us as a group today and not just listening to all these generalizations from different corners and leaders. Because listening to your own people will open up the different stories of realities that have happened in this past year. And I think you mentioned like the accessibility aspect of it, Andrew. It was like there's many layers here that are being learned in real time and we should embrace them and encourage that and get away from the past, because that was a time when we're not in the middle of all of this. So
sure. Yeah. And on the creativity side of things, mm-hmm. you have to be creative. I mean, that's your work. That's
exactly.
your work life, right? The governor's saying you can't be as creative when you do it remotely. You need those one-on-one interactions in an office space. You need those team interactions, and it's just not as productive. No?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think a lot of companies need to take a deeper look at themselves prior to the pandemic and understand that a lot of them were in hybrid models of remote and in-person offices anyways. And that's our digital world that we live in. Because just thinking back to my old teams, we had a mix of people all across the world that were working together despite being a predominantly in-person company. And so it's just, all right, how do we continue that collaboration? We did it back then. We're going to have to keep doing it now. And I'm watching all the different online collaboration tools rush to do like more whiteboarding and whatever sort of interactive functionality that brings people together in real time, but digitally. It's already happening. We just need to leverage these tools. There's tons of them. But people are just, they don't want to have to change with all this other change going on.
So how do you create in this newish for you? I mean, it's been more than a year. You're right. Now you have a job that is committed to remote. But how do you stay focused on creating when you're not with people in person?
So that's back to the online tools. We have different collaboration tools that it basically takes with the element of whiteboarding, putting stickies on a wall and just puts it on your computer screen. And so you can see everyone's cursors and everyone's faces and voices. And it's the same essence of that meeting room, kind of like how we are here. It's just in a visual format on a computer. So it's that doesn't change. And if anything, I learned in the past year that some of the barriers of the brick and mortar in my mind went down with the remote ability, because I used to, working with companies that have multiple buildings, you tend to gravitate towards your same group of people. And losing that, physical space in my mind actually opened up way more ties across the entire company than I would have expected had we just gone back to the office. So all across in my mind, it's been an increase of innovation, an increase of bridges and communication. And that's why I looked for the remote friendly first.
And what would you say then to CEOs, to managers, to companies who haven't done it this way? I think there's a bit of a generational component to this, mm-hmm. and usually people who are running companies tend to be a little older, not always. But if they're nervous about productivity and they're nervous about how to measure it, what would you say to them to say, look, if you think we can't be as productive, if you think we can't do this work this way, here's how you measure it. How do you know?
Oof, this is where it gets back to, how do you talk to your own people in your company? Because I've seen many a biased survey, something that kind of leans people to answering in a way that says, oh, we want to go back, or our engagement's down. And it's all just loaded data collection. So my big thing, I go back to what I said last time I was on the show, is we have to actually just have conversations with each other and figure out what's actually going on. Now, I do want to get into a deeper layer of the social side of this, because there's back to the accessibility, back to just personal experiences in the office. There's a lot of things that were reduced, a lot of noise that was taken down a notch when people get to work remotely. Or there's opportunities that open up because of the flexibility in remote and all of that. I don't know if you're going to bring all those stories together with a simple question. You have to have the right trust and the right environment in your workspace to collect that information. But I still just want these leaders to know that there's more going on than just people sitting at home not being, you know, productive. And we need to hear those stories, and you have to judge them according to, you know, a more balanced measure than just, did you click the screen 5 times today? Or, because I have been seeing that, not to derail from that point, but I have been seeing like the weird engagement tools that are just like, oh, your screen went to sleep, or how do you, and guess what, people, you can loop past those. So I don't even know why these flat numbers are even useful to people. So rambling is get back to having the real data.
It sounds like, though, when there's this, well, your screen went to sleep. It sounds like these are companies that don't really know how to measure if you're actually quote unquote working, and they get nervous that you're not.
100% I'm sorry, micromanagers, but this is not your year. This is not your future either. We need to figure out how to actually manage people and let them do their jobs the way that best suits them, because, you know, it's you're going to lose the people that you try to put them back into a box, and that's, you know, figurative and literal in some ways. So, it's back to talking.
And so, Andrew, this is a lot of what you do with the Accelerate team. I mean, it's leadership training, and it's helping companies understand the strengths of their workforces. And that's exactly what Kristen's talking about. Don't treat everybody the same. Get to know what people's strengths are. Get to know how people respond. Can that happen, especially when you scale up companies, when you get to larger workforces? Can they feel comfortable doing that?
Yeah, you know, I think we were talking when I was on the program, I don't know, a month or so ago, when we were talking about the lowering the work hours in a work week. And similarly, you know, when...
Or four-day work weeks.
Yeah. When the pandemic hit and people are trying to figure this out, and Zoom, everybody's downloading Zoom. Also, what they started downloading were all those employee tracking softwares, because they didn't know how to measure productivity. They weren't really sure. And in a lot of ways, you know, the pandemic really amplified what already existed in a lot of aspects of society, but also in corporate cultures, where if you had a low trust culture and you didn't have a good relationship with your boss, or you had a boss that was a micromanager, they're going to now look for tools to do the micromanaging in a high tech way, as Kristen was saying. And so, you know, I actually think it's interesting, because there's the potential that while it's definitely difficult to build that kind of social capital, because I think there's a lot of companies that may be doing all right now, based on kind of coasting off of social capital that was built previously by, you know, getting to know people or around the office and going to lunch together and those sorts of things. You know, now they have to figure out, okay, how do we onboard employees in a remote environment? How do we start to build that social capital and culture? And that's what I was talking about earlier with this innovation. You know, you have to innovate in your cultural practices and figure out how to update it. But actually, in terms of scaling up, I think there's actually potential for to be easier to scale up in a remote world, because not only are you not constrained geographically by where you can recruit people from, but, you know, it used to be, as Kristen was saying as well, like, okay, if we're all in the office together, but then there's an office in Buffalo or Syracuse or whatever, you're naturally going to gravitate towards the people that you know, are close to you. Or even if you're in the same building but on like different floors, you just naturally, that happens. Whereas when everyone has kind of this same opportunity to connect in different ways online and using certain tools, I it's been exciting actually to see how many productivity tools and things have popped up over the last year to figure out how to do this in a better way. I think it makes it potentially easier to scale up as these companies are trying to figure out. And at the same time, I won't say that, you know, there aren't times where maybe it does make sense now to bring your team together once a year for a retreat, or once a quarter, or, you know, certain times where, you know, there is some of that. Because, you know, as you were mentioning in the show previously, you know, when you were just talking earlier about the in-person aspect of performance art, right? You know, it's great to be there. It's great to see it. It's great to be in a crowd. And there are still aspects that there's a human nature of being together in relationship building. But what if we only have, let's say, a week every quarter where we bring everybody together? What do we absolutely want to do in that week? And being really intentional about what do we need to be in person for, and what can we find other opportunities for?
But that's different than saying, we need you to be in the office because we don't trust you. We need to monitor you. That is not the same. And I think what you're describing is a much healthier situation than a total lack of trust and a total lack of imagination in how you would even know if people are working. So, I mean, I just find that totally interesting. I also think when you talk about, you know, allowing the burgeoning culture in Rochester, thank God I'm not running governments or policies, but could we not see a future where if you look at lower cost of living, more house for your money, you start marketing to remote workers that this is a wonderful place to be. Rarely weather extremes, you know, a lot of opportunity to market this region for workers who are going to be part of these companies where they can choose where they live. You're nodding of them. Am I crazy?
No. This is a big thing.
Because you're going to stay here, right?
Oh, yeah. I love being in Rochester. It's a funny reversal because when I graduated, they were like, okay, you're in the IT sphere. So you go to California, you go to New York City. And I was like, nope, I like Rochester. I'm going to stay here. And everyone kind of got that head tilt. And now I'm looking at the flip side of it. I'm going, Rochester, if we open up and have this kind of remote culture life here, we can bring people to a wonderful cost of living and a place where we can all just not spend so much on rent and also have the local companies being flourished by people from all over. So I don't understand we're going backwards again in a way with these mandates that try to push us back to these overpriced cities and expensive areas. I think Rochester is poised for this. And that's also why I'm kind of nudging some of our local companies like, come on, it's right here for the taking. We're ready to go. Let's do it.
Well, I mean, I think they may look at your story and be heartened because you're someone who did work in a local office and then you worked remote and then you chose to stay here. You didn't say, hey, I can work remote now. I'm getting the heck out of Rochester.
Right.
You're staying here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really compelling argument for companies that are maybe on the fence locally.
Yes.
But for the culture to sell, do you think, Andrew, that there is a marketing point here?
Absolutely. And that's part of why I think it's so this pronouncement by the governor is so silly, because if a company does, you know, try to force everybody back to work, they're probably going to I'm not going to say a mass exodus, but they might see a lot of people that say, no, I want to go find somewhere where I can work remotely, or, you know, maybe going in one day a week or things. Because I think that's what I'm seeing with friends that I have in larger cities where maybe it's not fully remote, but rather than having to do an, you know, hour long commute into New York City every day, they can now live a little bit farther out, which again, for them, helps with cost of living and all of those sorts of things. And then maybe they only have to go in one day a week or something like that. So finding ways for, you know, I think it could really help spread out. And you know, I'm thinking back as well to when I was in college and you know, graduating, and one of the ways that a lot of companies would market themselves, you know, Google being the prime example, is they talk about, okay, we've got laundry on site, and we'll have buses that'll drive you to and from your office, and we'll you know, do everything. Basically, they didn't want you to ever leave. There's nap pods and all these sorts of things. Stay here forever, right?
No,
and so in some ways that's fun, and maybe that's a way to market to college students, because I think when young people, maybe they're graduating college or they're moving to a new city, and they want to, you know, go to all the happy hours and make new friends at work and all those sorts of things. And whether it's the pandemic, whether it's, you know, certain stages of life where people maybe are trying to start families and do other things and have different priorities, maybe they don't want to spend 24 hours a day at the office. And so finding ways for them to, again, still have a ways you can still build culture in in either a remote way or in a focused in-person but less frequent type of interaction. But that does offer opportunities for less commuting, for less travel, and for places like Rochester to not only, I'd say, yes, we can get remote workers from some of those places like Silicon Valley where the cost of living has just gone crazy, but also, to Kristen's point, what about some of the great companies that we already have here? They can start to grow, and they can maybe start to access different types of talent that they aren't able to find in Rochester, mm-hmm, by searching elsewhere.
All right. One other point to be fair to the governor here. He's concerned about spillover effect. So if you've got offices, often downtown, not always, but often, and there are restaurants, eateries, coffee shops nearby, and they rely on the daily foot flow. I mean, it's important. And he's worried about them. I'm worried about them too. But I'm also looking at the reality here of, if people are not working in a physical space, it doesn't mean they're not buying lunch. It doesn't mean they're not going to a coffee shop. They may be going to different coffee shops, and we may disperse a little bit. And maybe there are creative ways to utilize office spaces instead of forcing workers back into them. Maybe we create, and that's some of what Annalise and many people in this in local government are already working on. But I don't know that you can force prop up those businesses with an old model. I am concerned about those businesses, as the governor is, but I don't know that you can force prop them up. What do you guys think? What do you think, Andrew?
I completely agree. You know, I think that if you do try to force it, it maybe might help for a little while, but the market will decide, the workers will decide, they will go elsewhere, they will work remotely, they will leave companies that force them to come back into work if they really care about it that much. And so I too am worried about that. I'm actually thinking back to right at the beginning of the pandemic, we had a conversation on this show about at the time how there was two kinds of people now, the type of people that could work from home and the type of people that were doing all the deliveries and all the supply chain things
absolutely.
That made that happen.
And frankly, we're at risk.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And so I do have that in the back of my mind. And I'm, you know, that's maybe one reason that I would hedge on this a little bit. But to your point, you can't prop it up forever. You know, the market is going to do that. And so finding ways to help those people, maybe to help them transition. I'm even thinking, you know, people talk a lot about the Scandinavian countries, right? And they prop them up as socialist, and that's actually a misunderstanding of socialism, because what they actually do is they have a pretty strong safety net, mm-hmm. and then they have a market that works on top of that.
And they have really high innovation numbers.
They have huge innovation. Imagine if you weren't worried about having to, you know, put food on the table, and so you're like, okay, well, maybe I am going to go try to start this new restaurant in this new part of town, or I'm going to innovate. I'm going to try to start a company. When you have some of those basic things taken care of, you can be more innovative. You can take more risks, and that's one of the aspects of their success. So it's a misnomer to call them socialist. They have a strong social safety net, and then they have a capitalist market system that's built on top of that. And when you bring the two of those things together, you know. So I want to make sure that we do have a safety net for those people that might be displaced.
Yeah.
But help them figure out new ways to innovate, new things to do.
Well, thank you for bringing that, because I should have said this off the top here, but there's always a degree of privilege in a conversation about remote work. And this pandemic has revealed just how unequal work is in this country, how unequal risk is. There's no question about that. We are addressing the kind of work that conceivably could be done remotely and whether it is logical to force that work back into a physical setting. But I just want to acknowledge and appreciate that. So, Kristen, when you were working in an office space, a physical office space, before the pandemic began, there probably were lunch spots or coffee spots around. I mean, I don't know how they're doing. Are you worried about them? And what do you make of the governor's concern for those kinds of spillover businesses?
Yeah. So, first of all, I really appreciate the call out of the privilege aspect of this, because that is inherently, you know, we haven't nailed the discussion of privilege in the workspace, let alone what it means in the middle of a pandemic and in this new remote world that we're in. Like, there's just, we have to take that history with us of not nailing it in person into now. And of course, that's going to create many exponential more variables to solve. So I too want to draw that out and be like, yep, I'm not here to give generalized answers to these things. It's more of just awareness that is also a factor. To your question, though, that was another reason why I started searching remotely, because I started hearing about these hybrid models and, oh, don't worry, we'll bring you back. We'll make sure it's safe. Just to take us back into in-office history, there was a whole movement for a while of open concept, like open space type of businesses. And I used to kind of giggle because to me it was secretly less overhead. And then it's marketed as this collaborative thing. Everyone's closer together. And there's just data for days to prove against that. But then a pandemic hit shortly after that movement. It's like, oh, good. All these open concept offices now have to have panels and back to cubicles and back to space and closed space. So watching that happen and then now trying to pull us back to that where some of these places, you can't even have the water cooler. You can't have shared coffee or these shared spaces. It's not COVID friendly. So it's, you know, we're trying to tell people it's going to be fine. Just come on back. You just have to wear a mask. You have to stay in your office. You're going to be on remote calls anyway. You can't go get coffee. And I'm like, versus me being in my like pajamas and onesies and drinking my coffee, hanging out with my dog. Like, that, why would I cough that up? I can be just as productive, if not more innovative, from my own house. So that's what these businesses have to go up against. And I don't, they got to pitch it better than that. Mm-hmm. We're not even getting coffee.
No, yeah, okay, I get you. But does the governor have a point that we will see some restaurants, businesses close? Should we be worried about that?
Inevitably. And I say this as someone who attempts to be a Rochester foodie. I would never claim the prowess of it. I know we have wonderful restaurants here, but I try really hard to enjoy them all. And it broke my heart to see a lot of them close this past year. And so inevitably, there is that impact. I just don't want to conflate it with too many generalizations, because there are a lot of reasons why businesses closed this last year, but not being safe and not being able to have the foot traffic was a large one too. So yes, that spillover is going to happen. And I think the companies that adjust and anticipate a little more in this wild time, they're going to come through. Because frankly, my eating habits and the places I visited changed with the pandemic. So that lends itself to show that some people are finding ways to still go do the same activities just in a safer way. Mm-hmm. So it's not off the table, you know what I mean? Or I guess off the restaurant table.
In the restaurant table.
Yeah, exactly.
Indeed. So I've got a pile of emails from listeners, and I even mentioned, as we take our only break, we're going to come back and we're going to talk to another gentleman who's a remote worker who has some thoughts to share on this. But listeners, look, if you want to disabuse us of the notion that remote work is inherently less productive or less creative, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you're suspicious of it, or if you just still can't get your head around it, I mean, this should be an open chance to talk about all of that stuff and more. And if you want to do that, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI. If you're in Rochester, 263-9994, or you can email the program as all of your friends just did in the last 10 minutes, connections@wxxi.org. It's great. A lot of feedback. So let's take that only break. We're going to come back with Kristen Seversky, a product manager who works remotely. Andrew Amato is going to join us, also a product manager working remotely. Andrew Brady is the co-founder of the Rochester Chapter for Conscious Capitalism, CEO of the Accelerate team, and we're right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we discuss the limits and the future of vaccine mandates. More businesses are putting mandated proof of vaccines in their conditions for seeing customers. You're going to see it in a lot more places. And the question is, how far can it go legally? What are your rights? And what are businesses' rights? What about governments and more? We'll talk mandates Monday.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about remote work, and the reason this hour we're talking about that is Governor Andrew Cuomo made some remarks to an association earlier this week. He made remarks to the Association for Better New York, and he said that all private employers need to tell their employees you got to be back in the office by Labor Day. And he said that it can be done safely, and he said that there are economic concerns, and it's just not as productive, that you just can't get as much work done remotely. He says he understands remote work. It just doesn't really work. Andrew Amato is a product manager who also works remotely by choice. Andrew is on the line with us. Thanks for making time for the program, Andrew. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah. So tell us your story and maybe the evolution of your thoughts on remote work.
Yeah. So I worked for a big tech company up in Boston. I started about 3 years ago, and we all went home when the pandemic hit with no kind of end in sight to when we were going to be asked to come back in the office. And then as, you know, all kind of big tech companies do, they look towards, you know, the Googles and Amazons and Facebooks of the world to see how they are going to conduct their return to office. And so my company definitely took inspiration from them. And then when it looked like they were ready to start having us come back and everything, I decided that I would rather just stay remote. And because they were going to require days in the office and, you know, some other factors, I decided to look for an opportunity that would allow me to stay remote permanently. Now, before the break, you had mentioned that, like, we do have to talk about kind of the aspect of privilege that that plays into those kind of choices. And I'm very lucky to have been able to take those considerations and do something about it. So I thank you for bringing that up. But it definitely influenced my decision. And now I'm very happy with my decision to be permanently remote. And I don't think that we're really losing the creativity that Governor Cuomo was talking about.
What would it take to get you back in working in person?
I at this point in my life and career, I really don't know if there's an answer to that question. I have young kids at home who I get to spend more time with because I'm not commuting an hour each way, during the time when they're waking up and the time when they're, eating dinner and going to bed. I can be there for that. I don't know if you can put a price on that. So that alone was a huge factor for my decision. So I don't know if there's a way you'd get me back to the office at this point.
How do you find ways to create, to be collaborative, to be creative? That was one of the big arguments the governor was making. He understands remote work. You just can't do it. How are you creative in a remote setting?
Yeah, I actually think in a lot of ways, it's being remote has lent itself to being collaborative and creative in ways that we hadn't anticipated. And it's actually, I think, propelling us forward. The necessity breeds creative solutions, right? And so when we came home, there were things, in the tech industry, we like to whiteboard everything as a group. That's a huge loss when we knew we were coming home. Like, how are we going to do these sessions that we used to do all together, writing everything down? But you discover tools maybe you hadn't thought about. Companies that are out there producing, product management tools, all of a sudden get this exposure that they didn't have, and now their business is exploding because people are discovering them. And so they're filling the gap that people in the tech industry had. So I think that there's absolutely positives, even swinging in the other direction where no, we're actually more creative because now you take the whiteboard example. Once you're done, you take some pictures of the whiteboard, but then you wipe it down and it's gone. And then you have to go back to your phone. Whereas online whiteboard tools or online prototyping tools, that kind of thing has things like versioning. So you can always see what was done at any given point. And so you have a record of the kind of collaboration that gets done in an office that you may not have before. So, I think there's gaps that we discovered, and then creative tools, creative solutions, creative people that went and filled those gaps that has actually made us stronger.
Do you have managers in the company who are worried about keeping tabs on people actually doing work?
That's one of those questions that, as a people manager, that's kind of top of mind. But I think if you're hiring good people and the right people, then you're alleviating that just by the nature of the teams that you conduct. I think it's never going to go away. And I don't know that anybody has really solved that problem kind of soup to nuts yet. But I think that people feel overall that, there's no kind of loss and there's no worry that you're going to lose a ton of people, work hours, I should say, because we're remote.
Yeah. Let me just rip through some of the feedback that's coming in. First of all, Adam says, Evan, your guests today are great with wonderful arguments and excellent points. I hope the irony isn't lost on you that two people who argue to maintain a work-from-home lifestyle came to talk about it in person instead of doing it remotely. Why not show how seamless work-from-home can be and how you can have a collaborative conversation remotely? Love the show. That's from Adam. You got me, but you didn't, and here's why. First of all, Andrew Amato is joining us remotely. Kristen That's and right. Andrew decided to come in, and we still prefer it in person because it's just a clearer sound when you're in person. Phones are great, but Rob Braden has had a hard year, and I'm worried about our engineer listening to all those phone calls when he wanted the beautiful dulcet tones of Kristen Seversky and Andrew Brady in person. So the mellifluous tones of in-person radio is better. That said, it's better than it's ever been in remote setting, and we're going to use that a lot. We have to use it a lot, but we're going to try to mix it up, and when we can do it in person, we can't. So, Adam, you got me, but come on, man. Patrick says, super true that when people don't have to worry about basic needs, they can focus their energy on other things. I want a one-way ticket to Scandinavia. It's too bad we have to shame it here. Thanks for the point. So there you go, Andrew Radio. Patrick is moving. Have a nice time in Scandinavia. This is Chris, who says, Evan, I've heard very little about safety and health concerns related to returning to the office. We started remote work in order to protect us from a novel virus. We now have an even deadlier form of that virus spreading that can infect and be spread by perhaps even vaccinated people. The situation has gotten worse, and the governor is acting like this pandemic is over. That's from Chris in Rochester. Chris, the governor did address that in his remarks. And he says he understands the trepidation, but COVID numbers are down and we know how to do this safely. That's really all he had to say about that. I agree it's a little dismissive at a time when everybody's worried about case numbers going up. We're going to talk next week about vaccine mandates on this program. And I think you're going to see a lot of workplaces that are in person say to employees, if you want to work in the office in person, you must be vaccinated. But I don't know. And I think your larger point is a fair one. Is this the time to call everybody back to a physical space? Gunner says, let's not forget the challenge for middle managers to justify their own positions. With work from home, go-betweens are less needed on digital platforms where you can contact relevant coworkers directly, and it's harder to take credit for an individual or department's work with a visible digital trail. That's from Gunner. Kristen, you agree with that?
Okay, I do struggle with the middle manager discussion only because I think the managers that are thriving right now are ones that are keeping it as human as possible and checking in on people during a pandemic. Like, if you have that natural instinct to actually manage and keep your people in mind, then I don't see any risk to that, because people often leave bad managers before they leave everything else. So it puts the onus back on the manager, but I'm sorry, that's always been the case.
Has there been credit stealing that you've seen in workplaces?
I feel like I can't quite speak for that. I think, if anything, I feel like the remote life does leave a better paper trail, because you're not in an exclusive office with someone. You're not just going word of mouth. Like, you could see where conversations are being had and the text trail of various communication tools. So I don't know. I feel like there's more data to gather and put a little bit of credit to it now.
Okay. Andrew Amato, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the human nature person that you were talking about is, like, if you're a manager, who cares? You're going to be keeping tabs. I think that's completely true. And I also think that, like, if you're not, you're right that, you know, the manager is the reason that's going to cause someone to leave. So I completely agree with that. And then as far as, like, credit stealing, yeah, I don't know if credit stealing is something that I've, like, witnessed a lot of, but to the point you were making about the kind of paper trail, It's not only, like, easier to, like, point to your accomplishments because you have the paper trail, but also when it comes time for, like, reviews, or you're reviewing people that work for you, you can go back to that and say, oh, I have now, like, all of this whole history of what you've done, or the communication that you've conducted, and these are the reasons why I can promote you. And it's so easy to find that. So, again, I think it's a strength.
Andrew Brady, when I think about what makes for a good manager, I've probably told the story in this program before, but, and this was not at WXXI. This is years and years ago in a different time and place. But I worked for a company that we were going through a rough stretch of morale. There were some things that had come up. And the person in charge called a meeting. And everybody thought this was going to be like a, hey, like, you got this, don't worry about it. And this person said, I'm sick of hearing about bad morale. Every one of you is lucky to have a job. And if you don't like it, the door is open to leave. And it walked out. And it was like, well, I feel like running through a wall for this company. I mean, it was horrific.
Sounds like a Dilbert cartoon.
It was. And I couldn't believe it was real. And then I think about what remote work has done and the fear that managers have who are the micromanagers or want to keep tabs. So I think there's two things I'd love to hear you just talk briefly about. Number one, all these digital tools that Kristen and Andrew Amato are talking about, in the irony is it might be easier to keep tabs on employees in some ways. But why do we keep promoting people who don't know how to work with people? Is it because we are so bottom line driven? Is there something in sort of the structure of American business that's sort of who gets funneled upward? I don't understand.
There's an old adage, they call it the Peter Principle, where you basically get promoted until you reach a level of incompetence, which is basically
that's horrifying.
Which is basically like the thought of, okay, well, we've got a sales team of 10 and whoever's the best salesperson, let's promote them to sales manager, which doesn't make any sense because the skills and the things that are needed to be a good manager are not necessarily the things that make you a great salesperson. And so actually being able as an organization to find and sometimes to grow as well. I think that leadership skills and that empathy and those sorts of things can certainly be cultivated. But you need to it's a different set of skills than what made you successful here. So it's kind of the adage of, you know, what got you here won't get you there. You know, if just because you're successful in your current position, a new position is going to require different things. And either you need to have some of those skills or you need to be coachable towards some of those skills. And the other thing, just on the productivity point, is that I don't think measuring productivity, I don't think it's been solved in person either. You know, the ways that we typically do that are, what is FaceTime? You know, how long has this person been here? You know, oh, they're the first person in, the last person to leave. And if that's a measure of productivity, even if sometimes maybe we don't admit it, that that's the reason why we think they're so productive and so hardworking. In that case, I think that remote can be even better because we can take that away. We can be more of a results-oriented workplace rather than a time spent in the office type of a workplace.
I'm sorry, Kristen Stavrsky, but everybody knows somebody who was always in the office. That person lives in the office, and yet they really don't do anything. That's why that line in Office Space hit home so much when Peter tells the Bobs, I bet you I don't do more than 15 minutes of actual work in any given week. You know, and because everybody knows that, and you may be in the office, but what are you doing, and how are we measuring that? Just because you're there? Anyway, I'm sorry. I thought that was a great point. Do you want to add to that? You were looking like you wanted to jump in.
Oh, yeah. I think that's something I personally try to draw out in this whole shift that we're in, is I am deeply extroverted. I'm always in meetings wanting to engage and talk, and sometimes that's, you know, the extroverted people in the room drown out the rest of the opportunities and the different styles in which we work to cultivate together. And I think remote is more of a great equalizer that brings different voices to the same spaces, just not in the same how, like the same execution. Because I can take a seat or I can be muted, you know, if needed, and someone else can get their words in. And so I kind of challenge my fellow extroverts to understand that this is giving a lot of different opportunities and power to people that otherwise get left behind.
Yeah. All right, let me read two more quick emails here before we lose the hour. Edward says, follow the money. Governor Andrew Cuomo over the years has received over $35 million in campaign contributions from the New York City commercial real estate sector that we know of. He appears to be desperate for a fourth term and apparently has forgotten about his obligation to the health and safety of all people who would be forced back onto the subway and other transit systems, let alone offices. And I'm a lifelong Democrat who voted for Mario Cuomo for governor four times. That's from Edward. And David says, Evan, all of this sounds like a complicated excuse for people to work less and enjoy their home lives more. Okay, so there's David. I don't know anything about David. I appreciate the email, David. So let me ask all three guests if they want to weigh in that. What would you say to David, who says this is a complicated excuse for you to just be home more and to work less?
I can't shake my head harder. And that's not, I am a very, you know, I come from a point of privilege. I am a white woman in this space. And I just know various people in my world, the diverse takes on this is that there are different doors opening to better work, to better work-life balance. And honestly, I don't think we've even mentioned that a lot of remote workers work more from home because you don't always cut that blend between your home and your office life. And sometimes you get more hours out of people because it's just that easy to go to your computer. So that's a whole other factor. But just putting that kind of statement of you just want to do less is, I think, a slap in the face of the many ways that people are flourishing in this setup, whether it's people getting hours back with their children or people enduring less, you know, fewer microaggressions. Hello, these are all cultural things that were happening in the office that are then taken down a notch because we're in our own homes. So, sorry, I can't agree with that one.
And I also tend to think, even if we grant that there's some subset of the population that would be less productive working remotely, and I'm sure there are some, right? They're not going to be able to sort of work forever and not pull weight. You would know if you've got team members not pulling weight, wouldn't you?
Oh, totally. You can feel it. And I think if anything, because of remote life, people are wanting to prove that they're engaged from home. That's the other flip side that I'm careful about, is that because you can't see it, you can't be as performative in person, people are trying to do different ways to showcase, look, I'm doing a thing. And especially in the tech sphere, like as a product manager, I don't have like here's my pile of code I wrote anymore. So there's different ways to show that engagement. And There's a lot of, my mind's going a lot of different directions with that, but that engagement's definitely there, and you could feel when it's not.
Andrew Amato, what would you say to David?
Yeah, I would also really strongly disagree. I think the other thing that kind of, like, when you say work less, what does that mean? Because I definitely have seen some engineers that I work with that are working less hours than they were when we were in the office, but they are being more productive. If that, like, so you have those people that stay late, but now they don't have to because they're not as distracted, so they can put their heads down and get their work done. And if they can get the work done in less time, then they have more time to kind of do kind of maybe outside the box innovative thinking, or more time to try something new, which I've seen been very, very successful. You know, at the company that I just left, when that was the case, there were kind of more hackathon type days because, oh, we're actually crushing it on the engineering side, so let's take an extra day per month to try some new stuff. I think that was actually, again, a strength rather than a weakness. So yeah, I would really, really strongly disagree.
And Andrew Brady, as we get ready to wrap, that recalls to me that conversation we had last month about a 4-day work week and how some people go, whoa, the work week is 5 days. Excuse me. I understand inertia is very powerful, but that is not based on anything. It's based on whatever a society chooses. An 8-hour workday, a 9-hour workday, whatever, how many hours in a building. To Andrew Amato's point, if the job is the job and you can get it done, and you can get it done in less time, why is that a bad thing?
Well, you know, it's all about incentives, right? If your incentive is how much, you know, am I producing, then you're incentivized to figure out essentially how can I do this job in a lesser amount of time. And maybe with those extra hours, I decide to have more balance in my life. Or maybe I do decide, hey, I really love this work that I'm doing and I want to, you know, dedicate some more time to it. Whereas if 40 hours is what you have to aim for, then you're incentivized, maybe not quite like an office space to only do 15 minutes of work, but you have incentives to make it look like you're being productive.
I really appreciate this conversation, and maybe the governor will join us for it next time. But I want to thank our guests who are with us, Andrew Amato joining us via phone. Andrew, thanks for making time for us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Kristen Seversky, also, they're both product managers who work remotely. Thanks for not only sharing your story, but also giving us an update and telling us maybe some of how you feel about what the governor had to say. Thank you very much.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And Andrew Brady, co-founder of the Rochester chapter of Conscious Capitalism, CEO of the Accelerate team. Always nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Great conversation. Thanks, Evan.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Emery Stein, production assistant, Megan Mack, super producer. Evan Dawson saying thanks for listening. Have a gorgeous weekend. We're back with you Monday on member-supported public radio.